Welcome to the Bangers List podcast, a podcast where we talk about a new song every week from our ever-growing playlist that we share with each other. And look, it's meant to be about fucking songs that no one's really heard before, and now we're going to do a Slipknot song. The song is called Spiders. Gentlemen, how are we?
You're good, mate. How are you doing?
Fantastic, Julian.
Yeah, good to be back in the saddle again. Sorry, I missed last week. I had to go out of town.
We'll forgive you. Yeah, so like I said, Spiders by Slipknot. We'll just jump into a sample now. She burns so no one gets to read. The fingers pull your stitches tight, but knowing someone's secret is not enough. Everyone's a little bit a lot of the time. Yeah, so, look, I'm going to just say one thing, because I only need to say one word for this song, and it is this. It's eerie.
It is eerie.
So, straight off the bat, Slipknot, I'm a massive fan, by the way, just for that reference. Slipknot have a sort of theme with a lot of their records. So, it's not a theme musically or lyrically, but structurally. So, like, the eighth or ninth track, and I think this is the ninth track on each record, is always that really sort of creepy, like weird one. So in self-titles, it was a song called Prosthetics. Then it was a song called Gently on Iowa. Volume 3 had Vermilion, which we all know. And then All Hope Is Gone had Gehenna, which is Hebrew for hell. There wasn't really one on the Grey Chapter, but then they've sort of kept the theme going again. Little thing I noticed, they always just seem to have that one track that's just creepy and you don't know what's going on. It doesn't make sense. So it always seems to be around the eight or nine track number mark. I don't know if they're doing that on purpose, but
that's interesting.
Just ran a bit of info for you. Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, what do you think, Daniel?
Well, I agree with both of you. Like, it's an eerie song. It's really, really, really kind of creepy sort of vibes, and that's the first thing that kind of occurred to me. The title "Spiders," whilst it might not make sense lyrically, or we don't know what the hell they're really talking about, but the title "Spiders" really ties in well with the music that's got going on there. So, you know, the music's got that creepy, crawly sort of groove to it, right?
When you look at the title, Spiders,
it's
just when you look at the word sense. Spiders, like some people are just straight away scared of them as well.
Yeah.
Like arachnophobia is not something that I think anyone here suffers from.
Oh, look, but borderline for me, They creep me out a little.
Mate, if a spider lands on you and you can't see it.
Oh, I think everyone will freak out about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so.
I think getting on the creepy topic, this song's recorded in 7/4, which is weird for Slipknot. They've never really done something like that before.
Okay, so
I would say 7/8. That's me.
Well, no, the 7/8 is 7/4.
There's arguments for both sides, and I'll eventually get into that, but I'll just tell you some other things about it. So we usually have metal kind of songs. Obviously, we did a couple of weeks ago, had like a softer song, but they still fit in the metal genre. Would you guys almost say this one is prog rock, especially because it's 7/8 and 7/8, 7/4 is actually like a prog rock kind of time signature. It's quite common there.
Yes and no.
But what genre is it then if not prog metal or prog rock?
Well, I don't know about the prog part of things. I mean, just because it's in an odd time signature. Prog to me is it's about the lack of structure and the way the songs kind of just naturally progress and unfold. Think Tool, right? Like there's no real succinct kind of structure that they're going to stick by each song.
I'm not really into prog, so that's more of a hallmark of prog, you'd say?
Yeah, I'd say so. Okay. And then this song, whilst it's different and it's in an odd time signature, it's not different structurally. It's still got verses and choruses and it's
contradict what I was saying, but I wouldn't even say it's an odd time signature. Like 7/4 is not that odd. It's just
not used by them commonly.
But not used by a lot of sort of more accessible bands.
I would say pop. It's not very poppy, is it?
Yeah, because it's not like you can listen to like pretty much any of their records, right? Like any of their songs. The Heretic Anthem with the insane double kick and Gematria. It's got sort of all over the place, but you can still keep that sort of like 1, 2, 3, 4 count going. Whereas this, it doesn't have that. And I think crossing back to what we were talking about before, that's what makes it jarring as well.
Yeah. So that's
what contributes to that really eerie feeling because you can't get comfortable because every third and fourth, one and a two, it pulls the rug out from under you and starts again.
That gives you that feeling of like it's not finished. But the reason it is like that, so the counting, Daniel, is like you could say the counting would be 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. Obviously cleaner than that. And that third one knocks it all out of, like, it's not even, it's the odd beat, it ends on that. Is that what makes it feel like uncomfortable, unfinished? The movement is kind of weird, almost staccatoed into the next kind of, I guess, measure. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. I think in terms of counting it, I think everyone's got a different kind of method that works for them. For me, I've always just counted in the sevens. Like, straight away, I knew there was something up with this beat.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, what's going on? And then I noticed it was the time signature, and you count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And when it.
Teaching everyone to count.
As opposed to 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Just to give you that context. But,
and your voice goes really fucking monotone when you do that, by the way.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, you sound like a human metronome.
Maybe I am. Yeah. Maybe I am. The song builds up a little bit and the drums, the hi-hats open up, I think it's on the seventh count, after the first chorus, right?
Yeah.
And that signifies the start of, or the end of the bar, and then it starts again. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2. Like, okay. A lot of emphasis on that seventh count. And for me, that's kind of where you can kind of dictate where it kind of.
Well, let's not get too bogged down. I agree with you. Let's not get too bogged down in that, like the rudiments of it.
What I'm trying to say is 7/4 is an uncomfortable time signature in some cases, but you've shown that if you just count it out, it's fine.
Makes sense after a while. It throws you off guard at first, I think.
So, following on from what you were saying, this is definitely not like, this is again one of those, like Hang the Mason. It sits outside of what you would consider like a banger, like really heavy and stuff. But I actually have never thought about what genre this song would be, because it's always, well, it's only been like what, August 8th. So it's just under a month since this came out. It's a Slipknot song. Do you know what I mean? Like someone that knows, like longer term Slipknot is going to listen to it and go, it's a Slipknot song. Cause you've got, like a really sort of, to break it down structurally a bit, you've got that piano in the background, which is Craig Thompson, really sort of standing out there. You've got a lot of that weird sort of sampling, which is again him and Sid Wilson.
Is that piano, just to stop? The piano sound is just one little riff through the whole song. It's quite high on the piano.
It comes and goes, yeah.
It doesn't use the sustain pedal, so each note is quite staccatoed, quite short, just tink, 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 wherever it goes.
But that's, it's very effective song. In the way that it was effective when he used piano in Duality. I mean, if you don't know that song, like, you should probably just not listen to this fucking podcast.
Guess I'm out of here.
I was expecting a laugh there and I didn't get one. But it's like that sort of like less is more kind of approach. And like you say, as the song builds, you've got the, it's not a theremin, but it sounds like that sort of weird kind of wailing sound in the background during the last chorus.
Yeah. What's that about? Make you feel uncomfortable.
It makes you feel uncomfortable. Yeah. Funny enough, the track before this on the record, it's a 1 minute song. It's called What's Next.
Yeah. Like elevator.
Yeah. It sounds like elevator music, but towards the end, there's this jarring sort of like, it sounds like an alarm that's been put through the ringer and the compressor and a gate and this and that. And it starts coming in. And I know people can't see my hand movements here, but it starts coming in it's not on the same tempo as the music and the guitar at all. So you get this really sort of jarring feeling. It makes you really nervous and it builds up over about 10 seconds towards the end. And then this kicks in. So they sort of go hand in hand, if that makes sense.
It's a great transition, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really good. It picks you up and sort of drops you.
I was listening to this song on repeat, but what I wanted to do was listen to track 8 and into track 9, because it's like, it's only 1 minute. I think it's worth it.
I actually find that it makes it better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, not to get sidetracked like I always do. You guys said I'd come back and get sidetracked again. Thanks for shitting on me last week, by the way.
Well, if ever I'm not here or Joel's not here.
Yeah, that's it.
Go for it.
It's going to be on. It's going to be on. No, so, you get that very kind of very layered effect of Slipknot, and that's what I'm saying. It's a Slipknot song because, you've got the guitars, which are definitely Jim Root and Mick Thompson are standing out. I actually read something on, I think it was the Genius website. So this is like a 4-star, maybe like a 3.5-star bit of knowledge.
Do you want to explain quickly? We'll get there.
Yeah. Okay. But basically Mick Thompson was saying that this was the one they had on the shelf for a fair while, I believe. And then they sort of kept coming back to it.
Yes. I read that too. So I can verify that.
So do you want to give a quick explanation of the star rating?
So the star rating system, 1 to 5 stars, if you're making a statement, one would be just a kind of very
a bullshit.
It is bullshit.
This happened to a friend of a friend of mine. Yeah. There's nothing and, to verify. Yeah, yeah.
And five star being, you know, I've got the evidence here. I've got the research to back it up. Blah blah blah.
It's nothing. It's, like
you can substantiate. You can substantiate your claims.
Yeah.
Four stars, like maybe
you can. If you wanted to.
It's a lot of, you know, your own kind of knowledge and expertise is applied to it, but you can't necessarily. But there's sort
of communal knowledge of it as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Like everyone thinks, goes, yeah, no, that actually makes sense. But, and then like a three stars kind of.
So this statement's opinion. Probably four star. The fact that is we got that communal knowledge, we both know what we're the statement that you're referring to here. And I read that too, that Spiders was one of the first songs actually recorded.
Yeah.
They recorded the core elements of the song initially and then went to do all the other tracks, and they'd gradually like sprinkle another layer here or there. And then the song just sort of came to life, which is when you listen to the song really carefully, there's a hell of a lot of layers in this song.
Yes, there is. Yeah, there's even harmonies, which you love so much, isn't it?
I love harmonies.
Yeah, and there is some in this
vocal
song.
Vocal harmonies, yeah.
Vocal harmonies, yes.
Yeah. It's good. So like I was saying, it's I don't know what to classify it as, because it's a Slipknot song through and through. You know, it's got all the, like, you could listen to that and not know any of the layers. There's a guy on YouTube who our sound engineer, Colin, was telling me, he's this guy that's worked in production. He's in America. He's basically worked as a producer on fucking squillions of these. And he does the squillions of records, right? He does this YouTube series where he actually gets the OG MIDI file, or not MIDI files, the OG recording files for these songs from these bands, right? And he did one for Duality by Slipknot. And there were fucking layers in there that I didn't know about. Like, I've known that song for nearly 15 years or over 15 years, because it was released just over 15 years ago, I think. And I didn't know these layers were there. But then you hear these little tiny little layers, like a DJ scratch or like a sound effect. And you think, fuck, yeah, if you took that out, I would notice that. But wow. I didn't know it was there to begin with.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And I think that's true of a lot of bands, but I know for a fact that Slipknot have a very, well, there's, you know, being nine of them, there's that very diverse and very layered feel to a lot of their music. And I think Spiders, even though it's not the heaviest song on the record, it's the one soft one, with the exception of a couple, sort of, it's the weird one.
Yeah.
So, you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah. It's like if you took away the bass player from a song, no one would be happy. But we'd all be like, oh, I didn't know I needed that guy here, you know?
Speaking of the bass, it's so friggin' low in this song. It's crazy. Like,
isn't it?
Yeah, but
when the guitar solo plays, you can really hear that bass chugging away behind it. Did you notice that? And it just is I don't think there's any distortion on it. But then it really stands out. Like, it's just, oh, fuck, there's a bass guitar going there. And I think they've done that on purpose as well. It's Alex Venturella. I think it's Alessandro's name. Alex Venturella, he's been with them for, what, 5 years now?
Since Paul Gray passed.
Yeah. Yep. Well, they picked him up for the Gray Chapter record. Gotcha. And then he stuck around, much like Jay Weinberg, the drummer. But, I think that's him sort of saying, hey, like, I'm not just a bass player. Like, I'm in this band as well. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of him filling it out and saying, I can stand up and sort of stand out by myself too. That's the sort of impression that I get from it.
Yeah. And even, I think the lack of heavy guitars in this song, which, just a little fact for you, five stars, because I read this in an interview that was
everything's going to have a caveat now.
Jim Root actually stated that whilst it's not your typical Slipknot song, it's not full of, you know, heavy chugging guitars, but he's actually a big fan of that because it allows them to kind of express themselves more artistically and shows people what Slipknot are truly capable of. They're not one-trick ponies.
I think he really enjoys that. I think he would really enjoy that too, because he hasn't been with Stone Sour for a while now as well.
Mm.
And that was definitely a creative outlet.
Was he out of Stone Sour?
He was fired about 3 years ago.
At Stone Sour.
Yeah, so before around project, yeah, around yeah, the too. Time the Grey Chapter came out, he was fired. So they've never really, that I've seen, they've never really gone into it, but Corey Taylor and Jim Root were like, Corey Taylor wasn't involved in the decision to fire him, I believe. And Jim Root had a couple of really hostile things to say about the guys from Stone Sour. He basically said that one of them's only in it for the money.
Mm.
And that's why they wanted to go a more commercial way. Whereas anyone that knows his work, he knows that he has a very unique, but also sort of like structured and, unique and structured way of playing. And he doesn't sort of let anything get in the way of that. He actually called one of them out, or a couple of them out, and said, basically, to paraphrase, those guys need to understand that if Corey and I hadn't done Slipknot, that they wouldn't be able to do what they do now. So basically, like, fuck you. I'm the reason you're famous, in a nutshell.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's one of those things where he can definitely go, right, I'm not just a heavy metal guitarist. I'm a, you know, because if you watch some of his playthroughs he does of like Kill Pop and the Devil in Iron stuff, his warm ups and his musical knowledge are ridiculous. He uses all these fucking Latin, Spanish words that I don't know. And
is he the lead guitarist?
Or do they share the load? In the early days, Mick Thompson was more the lead, but they definitely both share the load.
Do you know who does the solo for this song?
Yeah, I'd like to touch on the song. It's fucking.
I would assume Jim, though. Because just from having watched him play.
Well, it's got a Tom Morello esque feel to it. Doesn't
that's a good word for it. Because I was going to say it's just eerie and there's so much effects on it that it sounds that way. It's eerie again, quite jarring. Like the bends are pretty, like, you know, the bends are pretty intense.
Makes you feel like you're in a horror movie or something.
Exactly. Right? The whole song makes you feel like you're in a horror movie.
Well, having that solo, like I said, then the bass guitar underneath it, they not that they don't mesh, but again, yeah, they're both jarring. So it makes you feel uncomfortable again, but you're sort of intrigued.
Yeah.
That was the impression. I didn't like this fucking song at all when I first, my first listen through the record, I listened to it about 3 times in a row and I listened to this song and I was like, it just seems like a soft one. Wasn't really into it. And then
filler.
Yeah. Well, like an idiot. I didn't listen to it that well. And then I just sort of was at work one morning a couple of weeks ago and I listened to it and I was like, oh fuck, this is actually probably the best song on the record. Well, that's a big call, but you know,
I'd agree with you.
Yeah. 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 I mean, like, this record has been a little divisive for people as well. Just to touch on the record again a bit. It's the first one in.
What's this album called?
It's called We Are Not Your Kind.
And Slipknot have done a fuckload of albums. When did they start? When did they form?
They've done 5 records. That's they started in 1995, 6-ish.
Okay. So we're pushing 20 plus years here.
20 plus years. They did Made Feed Kill Repeat. Then they did the self titled record in 2000. Yes, it was 2000.
I'll take your word for it.
Yep. And then Iowa in 2002. Then they did the Volume 3 in 2004. Then they had a hiatus and did All Hope Is Gone in 2008. Then they had another hiatus and did 0.5, The Grey Chapter, which was obviously after the death of Paul Gray. And then they've waited 5 years again to do We Are Not Your Kind. So.
Has it really been 5 years since the Great Chapter?
It's been 5 years since the Great Chapter. 2014 was like, very long time coming. They actually put out a song, November of last year called All That Life. I had to think about that for a second. But they obviously didn't include that on a record because it contains parts by Chris Fain, who is their former percussionist who recently got fired about 4 or 5 months ago. And that's a pretty sticky situation as is, which has sort of marred, in my opinion, the release of this record. He's sort of accused them of withholding money from him, and it's this really sort of ugly kind of fucking lawsuit. Yeah, it's just ugly. Like, it's not really worth thinking about if you're going to talk about the merits of the record. So it's just a whole bad thing. And they've got this new guy that no one's figured out his identity yet. So people call him Tortilla Man.
Yeah, that's right.
No, they figured out who he was by checking his Instagram. They found
a woman's account.
Who followed like 3 people and had one hashtag, which was Tortilla Man, as it was. And apparently that woman is his wife. And by searching for his wife on Facebook or something, they found him and they got his name. No. I believe was how it went down. Is that true or is that a two-star statement?
I can't substantiate that.
Because I read down for a bit
Hang on.
I'll stop talking because.
2 weeks ago, Slipknot's Corey Taylor says nobody has correctly identified Tortilla Man.
Yeah, bugger.
How messed up is the internet? Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm just Googling that right now.
If that is a true statement, then the internet is so messed up. Yeah, nothing's safe.
It's the kind of thing that's funny if, like, his wife just had Instagram to search for his hashtag and that's how they found him. Yeah. But if it's not the case, sorry for lying.
I want to get into the lyrics, but before I get into that, I want to just – you pulled up the YouTube video before just to get the lyrics because one of the things that bands are doing a lot now is it's been around for a while, but they as soon as they put out a record, the whole thing's free on YouTube, like super high quality there for all and sundry. And I think that's really cool. Not because it allows people to just record their music with Audacity or shit like that, because who the fuck does that now? But it's just people that may not be able to afford the record straight away, but can still get on the internet or I don't know. It just says we're giving you our music for free. Here you go.
Yeah. Okay. That was just. You had to put your music on YouTube because someone was going to rip it off and put it on there anyway.
Well, and that's the other thing too. That's a very good point. They're just getting out in front of it.
Yeah, it's so a good idea. Because it takes a lot of money from these record releases are meant to make money for these bands. And if it's just on YouTube straight away, you don't really need to buy the album. So is it killing that part of their income?
Well, I think within like a day or two, a lot of the songs had like 100,000 plays each.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? One thing I wanted to talk about that just tilts
before
me.
Before the lyrics.
One thing I want to talk about that just tilts me because you pulled the YouTube video before. Like a lot of music's on YouTube, but like react videos on YouTube specifically for music, right? I just want to touch on this briefly.
Good.
I Googled spiders.
Fuck this.
Just because I wanted the lyrics because I'm a bit of a like snob. I always go to like a band's YouTube page because I know that that's where you'll get the true lyrics.
Gotcha.
I Googled just, oh, sorry, not a YouTube search, Slipknot spiders. Now you would think that it, like, you know, the algorithm would say this is the exact one and probably a bunch of people that ripped it off. The second fucking video was some guy like reacting to he'd reacted to every song one by one. It's the same fucking cancer videos you see. Like the thumbnail's got like a stupidly big caption in it, and then it's just them pulling a really like stupid face.
Yeah, fuck off.
Oh my god.
Who's into that? Who watches that?
And it's like, this dude's got like 90,000 views in 2 days, and so the song has like 150,000 views in 10 minutes.
Okay, look, I'll admit, it's a really smart way to ride the coattails of a band, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, because you can't, like, it's free use, basically.
Yeah, fuck.
But I just, there's this one dude, and I'm going to call him out. I got no problems doing that. Is this hip hop head reacts to metal?
Yeah, this is dude, a free space. Call him out. He's shit. Yeah, fuck him. Yeah. Don't even know him. Fuck him. Yeah.
But like, there's so many of these people. They're all like, oh yeah, like person that listens to rap reacts to metal. I'm like, I've seen how many videos you do. Like, you listen to metal almost as much as I do. Yeah. Like, you're listening to as many metal songs in a given day as I am. Like, I think that actually qualifies you as a metalhead. Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh, so it's metalhead reacts to metal.
Anyway, I guess my issue is just fucking react videos and reaction culture. I just think it's fucking cancer because it's people literally just sitting there and doing nothing. And
like I said, who watches that? Nobody wants to watch me react to, I don't know, a shitty pop song.
It's or like a good pop song. Okay, whatever. It's like Nickelback of YouTube, right? Because like those cunts sell out stadiums, but I don't know a single person that has bought a ticket to their show ever. So someone's buying these tickets.
Yeah.
How many people do you know that have bought Nickelback tickets?
One or two, maybe.
But not that many, right?
And they're not metalheads.
They could sell out the ANZ Stadium if they wanted to. Do you know what I mean? Like, maybe not the whole thing, but they could sell out a fucking big stadium.
Yeah, it could play to, you know, and I know tens of thousands. Yeah.
I know it's, what's the word? It's the anecdotal.
Fuck.
It's anecdotal what I'm saying. But, like, who the fuck's buying these tickets? Who the fuck's watching these videos? Anyway, that's my little rant.
Wait, no.
We've missed you, mate. We've missed you.
Like, Daniel was real quiet through the whole thing. He probably goes home and he's like, time to watch some reacting videos.
Like time to post a new reaction video.
Like a wig and a mustache. Oh, dear. All right, so what are we making the lyrics?
I don't know, man. It's
you don't know? Well, I'll tell you.
Okay, Joel, you start. You kick us off,
because, like, Julian's already said to me, I know what these lyrics mean. You can eat shit. And I was like, well, fuck you.
What the fuck did I say that?
I've got something to say. Look, I had to think about it for a long time. I listened to the song a few times and I wasn't enjoying it because, I don't know, it wasn't my vibe, it wasn't metal enough for me. But the lyrics, please tell me the lyrics are some kind of like metaphorical theme for dealing with self-doubt.
Yes.
And the self-doubt halting your progress in your life.
I would wholeheartedly agree with
for
that.
For a few lines. And it took me a while to get there and I kind of felt silly. And I hated the chorus, and the chorus almost has like no relation to the verse.
All right, we're back after some technical difficulties.
Fucking need our sound guy here. So what happened? What were we talking about?
Colin.
Well, the problem is that our sound engineer, Colin, is actually in Vanuatu on holidays at the moment, so he can't be with us. But we'll get that. We'll get on top of that. So
we're talking about lyrics.
Okay, so the lyrics still, I was saying, Corey Taylor has been a very, even for someone that really likes lyrics like me and spends a lot of time reading them, he's been a very difficult person to kind of categorize. Not that I'm sort of the authority on it, but he doesn't ever really like attack something directly. Like he's referred to himself in the third person a couple of times, and that's sort of spread over the course of his lyrics. This one is no exception to that. Like it's wordplay and it's sort of metaphors and analogies and similes and stuff like that.
Is it about himself?
Well, the reason I sort of bring that up is if you read the lyrics to a lot of the rest of this record, he's very angry. like he's always been a very aggressive, sort of angry kind of person, like, you know, writing about like mental issues or like just social problems that he sees and stuff like that. But this record contains a shitload of just straight up aggression, like Solway Firth, really angry one, Elias Funeral, Nero Forte, stuff like that. Something's pissed him off. So I think that was more of the theme of the record, but this one is sort of hard to categorize. Okay. But I think to expand on that rant, I think definitely sort of self-doubt, dealing with your issues and sort of anxiety, I guess, and stuff like that. Not to be like, oh, it's about anxiety and depression, because everyone fucking says
everyone that. It's about that. What do you reckon, Daniel? I need to know what your thoughts were.
Yeah, look, I'm on the same page when it comes to self-doubt. I think that's a big theme when it comes to the lyrics in this song. In particular, the line, everybody's limited to what's on their mind.
Yeah.
That's to me, that's stating that often self-doubt prevails and it restricts you from taking that chance.
People can only see so far.
Yeah, and they're their judgment's clouded. That self-doubt holds them back from doing what they want to do. They miss opportunities that present themselves.
I think each verse is slightly different as well. Yeah. So the first verse is like talking about you're hiding something. What are you trying to hide? You know, you can go in alone, keep it in between the pages of the books you burn so no one gets to read. You know, no, like there's something going on there. There's something untoward happening. And then the second verse, I think talks about sort of seizing the opportunity, you know, but it's sort of, again, the second half of it kind of refers to like someone feeling, worn out, you know, what is it? The lyric there. Time to think it over. I'm over trying to overthink. I've had enough. Sort of, you know, this is kind of this exhaustion or this fatigue feeling. And I guess that last little third verse, is kind of just an exclamation of, again, fatigue or giving up, I suppose, if that makes sense.
Yeah, right. And what do we think of the chorus? Like, I think I might be onto something with it, but
yeah.
The chorus to me is just so cryptic and metaphors galore. You know, I'm not sure, but for me, the spiders represent opportunities that are coming to present themselves. And the line, what is it? Spiders come in side by side. Two by two and night by night. But the last one, who is food and who is thrown away? So the spiders are coming in and then who is food, who is thrown away? The food being, you know, the opportunity, who's going to take that chance or thrown away, who's going to just dismiss it and just, you know, miss that chance.
I think that's a shit analysis.
Oh, okay. Ooh, right. Go nuts.
I just had to get you back for last week. I agree with that. I think that's a good analysis. My interpretation of that was just – it's all subjective, isn't it?
It is at the end of the day. Yeah.
That's why we like having the – you know, I sort of in credence or in continuation of the eerie kind of feeling of the song, like spiders is something that generally make people uncomfortable – you know, so the spiders may be like someone's self-doubt, someone's like mental anguish or anxiety. Mm-hmm. And it's a never ending thing. You're never like, if you have anxiety, you generally never get over it. You've always susceptible to this kind of thing and it's continuing. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's a permanent thing. Like this could always happen two by two and night by night. Like take that literally. Every night this could happen. You know, you could feel stressed every night. You could be dealing with a problem every night. I know for sure that I've had problems that have kept me awake night after night after night. You know what I mean? You feel good all day and then you get into bed and you go, fuck. And that's when everything sort of hits you.
Yeah,
so that was sort of my interpretation. The who is food thoughts. And who is thrown away is, you know, who is able to withstand this and who is susceptible to it and succumbs to it.
I guess. Who feeds on it and thrives from it and who succumbs to that anxiety. Yeah.
If we're talking about the self-doubt, maybe he's talking about when he creates something, you know, the subject is creating something they don't want to share or they've thrown away something that they could have used for an opportunity. You know, people, maybe there's someone out there like writing really good songs, but they never have the opportunity to share it because of their self-doubt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So maybe if you spin it for a positive light, you could say, take your chances.
Like he's sort of a pretty real dude. He could even be sitting there analyzing his own. Oh, sorry, I'm sitting too far away. Yeah, analyzing his own work and saying, you know, is what I'm doing? It's 20 years on. Am I still able to do this?
Huh?
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, Corey Taylor, get in touch with us, buddy.
Just at the Bangers List on Twitter if you want to maybe just retweet.
Yeah, let us know what you think about the song because you made it.
I think you know it's. there's a million ways to skin the cat on this one. And I think that's a really good thing about Slipknot's lyrics, because there's always a couple of different ways to interpret it. There's never just like one, you know, like they've got a song on those record called A Liar's Funeral. And
it's a great song.
Oh, it's really fucking good song. You could listen to that and go, that's about Chris Fain. Never trust the one beside you, this and that. You know what I mean? You don't trust your friends, so on and so forth. But it could be one of those songs that's like, again, from the more metalcore end where we just listen to a band, like someone's fucked me over. So like, I'm going to write an angry song and fuck you. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just one of those generic, angry, pissed off at the world kind of songs. It could be anything in between. So that's the sort of uniqueness of the way that he writes and they write as a band.
Well, what's the secret to their success? You said 20 years, like 1990s. Metal was obviously a thing. It was a very hard time to get out as a band. What made them?
You think about that. Marilyn Manson hadn't even been blamed for Columbine yet. Like we were, like metal was that sort of young and not to bring up a particularly, like that's a pretty impactful example. But that's my point. You know, bands like Korn were sort of dominating. Rage Against the Machine had sort of like not risen and fallen, but they definitely established themselves. But then it was sort of like the newer metal stuff, the angrier, the darker, you know, like you listen to fucking Blind by Korn, and that's like, that was like 95 96, and that was just the beginning of this. So then these guys came along. I think every record they've done has been different. You know, the self-titled one had a lot more of that. It wasn't rap metal, but it was more along the new metal lines. And then IOI was just really fucking angry.
I think Corey Taylor said they wanted this album to sound more like Iowa.
That was actually amended. This is a four star.
Oh,
this was actually amended by Jim Root in an interview later. He said that like what Corey's saying about Iowa wasn't wrong, but it wasn't like we're going to write another Iowa.
Yeah.
It's just we're going to have sort of a feel. I believe that was what he said. He was basically like, that wasn't super accurate, but it was sort of accurate.
Gotcha.
So he was saying that what Corey Taylor said was a three star. So
he wrote all these songs, but what he says is not true.
I am right.
Yeah, exactly right. I think that because they're able to evolve, they have a core feel to their music, but they're definitely able to evolve. I think one of the unique things about them is that between Iowa and Volume 3, a lot of the media, and when, you know, we're talking about media that painted Marilyn Manson as the Antichrist, you know, the really scared middle America generation of parents that didn't know what moshing was and were just freaked the fuck out by anything metal-wise. You know what I mean? Like, we were quite young back then, so we never really saw a lot of that.
I was swayed by, yeah, I guess, the media and the people around me that were like, oh, Slipknot is emo. Slipknot is, you know, screamo is bad.
Oh, hang on, sorry.
Vibe.
Yeah, between Iowa and Volume 3, a lot of his critics said that Corey Taylor can't write a record without using profanity. He can't not swear because he swears. Like, Iowa has lots of fucks and shits and stuff. So he did Volume 3 and there's not a single swear word on it. There's like one instance of blasphemy. And I think that's – so Jesus never ends in duality. But there's virtually no swearing on it.
Wow.
So that was akin to the groove of the record. That was – they really took a lot of that aggression and harnessed it and focused at that. And that's sort of what they've been doing since, I guess.
Damn. So yeah, that's basically how you succeed for 20 years as a metal band. You just say fuck you to the media.
That's pretty much what they've done. Like, they've never really been wanting to have anything to do with mainstream. They've never been interested in it whatsoever.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I can't really think of any of their songs that have had super mainstream media attention.
Yeah. Well, let's have some fun time story time with Joel, because I was influenced by the media and people around me to say, like, Slipknot is shit, blah, 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 blah. And eventually, like, fuck, maybe 10 years ago, I saw them live. I didn't listen to them at the time. Went out and saw them at Soundwave or something. There was 50,000 people there, I think. It was massive.
Was that the System Soundwave? Slipknot Soundwave?
That was the one. Were
you guys there?
Yeah. I was in the crowd, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So I wasn't with you guys.
You and I went together.
We did. We weren't in the crowd together.
No.
I was listening to the songs. And I was like, this isn't like what people had told me. I'd come to like metal by then, and it was the sound they were producing was like on point with everything else that I enjoyed. They were all like really good musicians. They were showmen, like, you know, they wear their masks and stuff.
Yeah.
It was a really good show. They made us all like squat down for a couple of minutes.
Spin it out.
Yeah. And then we all.
They do that.
Yeah. And everyone that was standing up was having like bottles and shit thrown at them until they sat down. And like the whole time it was like, You could feel it in the air, like the energy. It was intense. It was really good. The performance was amazing. And then afterwards, I went home and I was like, wow, Duality is the best song I've ever heard in my life. So, like, yeah, it was great. And that's how I came to enjoy Slipknot, besides, you know, aside from everyone telling me not to enjoy them from my childhood. You guys come into them any other way?
You first.
That's the my first memory of them as well. Everyone's squatting down. I think I was seated, and I got to see it from up high, and it was just amazing.
It looks unreal, hey?
Yeah, so good.
It's even and more
who,
fun.
And who someone what jumped off the like
the MTV tent where they did like the sound tent?
He's jumped. He's just
was
like
it one of the band members?
Yeah, yeah
that would have been Sid Wilson, the DJ.
He does that a lot of shows.
Like, where did he land? Like, this is
the crowd.
Yeah, crowd catches him.
He just throws himself into the crowd.
This was high. This is, I think, looking 6 meters plus where he jumped off.
Yeah.
It was high.
He loves jumping off the stage and stuff, yeah.
All right, cool.
So, you know, definitely got my attention. And I hadn't really listened to them a lot at that point, but that's when they kind of, you know, got me thinking about them a little bit more, and I'll never forget it.
It's a big thing we always say, like, you should try and make your own opinion of things rather than being swayed by what the media or people or what people tell you. I can edit it later. It's fine. Yeah.
I have been listening to them since I was about 14. The Volume 3 record was the first one that I heard by them.
Guitar Hero.
No.
And what was the song on Guitar Hero?
Before I Forget.
Before I Forget, yes.
Guitar Hero made me fucking hate that song for years.
And that's fair enough. I
don't hate it now, but
I enjoyed the song because of Guitar Hero, and I was like, that's probably their only good song. What a stuck-up little cunt I was.
The first song I heard by them was actually The Nameless, if anyone knows that song. It starts off really jarring, and it's like this sort of intense sort of riffing, and there's this little scratch in there, and it just sort of takes off, and you're just like, what the fuck's going on? Because up until that, like, these guys were actually my baptism of fire into metal. Before that, I was like Sum 41, Green Day, Blink-182. Like, I was a little punk rock kiddie, you know what I mean?
Punk boy.
Yeah, you know, that sort of shit, which is sort of what you do when you're about 12, 13, I guess, from that generation with which we're all from. So, yeah, that was a baptism of fire for me on that one. And then I just went, I'm going to listen to all of this. That record to this day is, like, in my top 10 hard. So
there you go.
Yeah. All right.
Did you want to say anything else, dude?
I just want to try something new here. I haven't even run this by you guys yet.
Yeah. Ooh, surprise.
Ooh. Before we get into the bangs and before we get into the similar songs, similar bands, blah, 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 something a little bit new. Who is the MVP for this song? Which musician, which member of the band plays the most valuable part?
Corey Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
fuck you, the guy on the piano.
What's his name?
Piano
Craig
guy.
Thompson. Look, that's actually a really fucking hard question to answer. I just think from the lyrics, but I'm massive into lyrics.
Yeah.
Like, but, you know, as we've talked about for the last nearly 40 minutes, there's nothing really bad about this. Mm. It's all quite unique.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would still say Corey just because of his delivery and the lyrics.
What do you reckon, Daniel? Your question, man. I want to hear what you had to say.
I think the drummer, Jay.
Jay Weinberg.
Yeah, because we were talking about the weird time signature.
Yeah, yep. And the weird time signature, that's what got me going initially, what drew me into this song. And it's just it's really subtle use of you know, rudiments and all these kind of drumming techniques. If you listen really carefully, there's a lot of accenting going on.
Opening the hi-hat as well.
Yeah, opening the hi-hat. And he does it a lot with very little, I think, as well. Like, he's not, you know, hitting crash cymbals left, right, and center.
No.
And he's literally just on the hi-hat and the kick and the snare and occasionally hitting the toms, right?
Like I said a second ago, you've probably got the custom percussion there as well. So
yeah.
Sean Cran and maybe Tortilla Man. Mm. No, I don't know that he recorded with them.
Yeah.
But I would say that you'd say the percussion section, but specifically Jay Weinberg.
I think I could definitely hear the percussions in there. You can hear, like, you know, shakers and all this other crazy shit going on too. But I'm talking about the drums specifically. Well, I think it's the driving force for this song. It's what
– as a drummer, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Like, he does very well with not using all that much. Like, I can't actually – they're probably in there, but I can't think of where a crash cymbal would be hitting that.
Yeah.
He does use cymbals. But, yeah, it's just hi-hat kick and snare.
Yeah, simple but effective. It's great.
Yeah.
I guess you guys want to tell me the bangs now, don't you?
We want to know who you think is the most – I know why everyone's leaning right into the microphone.
For the theme of the song, it's the piano for me. It's so simple. There's a lot of skill involved in just knowing if you use short notes and the same thing over and over, it will sustain the eerie feeling through the whole way. You know, that atmosphere of uneasiness that's mostly the piano for me.
Fair point, yeah.
Yep.
So
I get you.
I agree. Yeah. All right. So just quickly, notable mentions from this record, I would say Nero Forte, Critical Darling, Orphan.
Orphan's great.
And Solway Firth, because it's just so much fucking anger in that song. Yeah. That's a got a California accent on there. Those would be my picks. What about you?
I'd say Elias Funeral and Red Flag.
Yep.
I think, yeah, Red Flag's just got that grip to it. You know?
You guys are just like, this song's great, but also listen to the whole album.
Yeah. Well, it's not really a bad song, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Oh, Insert Coin. Come on. That's pretty good.
Definitely the What's Next Spiders combo. If you're going to listen to this song, listen to the song before it called What's Next and let them flow into one another.
And then into Orphan following that is good too.
They did sew a lot of the tracks together with kind of like weird, eerie, ambient noise and stuff like that. So
that's cool.
Basically, listen to the album in order. Don't put it on shuffle. Listen to it in order. Yeah.
All right.
What about you, Joel?
Look, like everyone knows Slipknot by now. Like, this was just basically a fucking history lesson on Slipknot by Julian, really.
I'll just sit next week out.
There's some good stuff. They've got some pretty like rough, scary stuff. The band, it's whatever. I guess if you have listened to Slipknot for a long time, you would have found other bands similar to them as well. So there's probably no point in sharing other bands that are similar unless you guys have some you really want to say.
So I don't really know a lot of bands that I would actually classify as similar.
Yeah, they kind of do feel their own niche, don't they?
But they, you know, they fit into like the heavy metal sort of like upper echelon. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Well, shall we get into the bangs then?
We shall. Who wants to go first?
41 minutes at the moment.
Joel wants to go first today.
All right. Since, like I said, this song fucking slipped under my nose somehow. I was like, hello, we're going to talk about this not metal song now. I'm going to give it 2 out of 10 because it doesn't bang hard, but it's still a great song.
Taking the bangs too literally, mate.
Yeah.
Julian?
9. This is a 9 song for me. I am a Slipknot fan, as I've just demonstrated. But I think the reason I give it such a high rating is because it's a band that's known for being very, very good at being very atmospheric, and they're stepping out of their comfort zone and doing something a little bit different, and it's really fucking paid off. So yeah. I give it a 9.
Yeah, fair call.
Daniel,
I'm leaning towards a 7.5 for similar reasons to you there, Julian. I think they really stepped out of their comfort zone, and going back on what I was saying before about Jim Root, saying how proud he was of this song because they were able to sort of cut back on the guitars a little bit, and it just allowed everything else to shine through a lot more. You can hear what's going on with the drums, the piano, the percussion, like all those extra layers. It makes you appreciate the song a lot.
Yeah, because that stuff can get drowned out or ignored or left behind when you've got your guitars and drums just being as loud as possible.
And like what Julian was saying before, you hadn't heard until someone had pointed out this particular part of the song, this particular layer in the song. He hadn't heard about it, and then, you know, you can't really appreciate the importance of those little extra bits and pieces. And you can tell it's a work of art, this song. It's a work of art. You can tell a lot of effort has been put into it, and the fact that it was, you know, one of the first songs that was recorded and they slowly added more layers to it. Corey Taylor said it was like seasoning a stew.
That's without ruining it. Yeah. You know, they didn't put too much flavor, just enough. There exactly. You go. I guess we'll wrap it up, boys. It's been a long slog today, this history lesson. Talk to us on Twitter at The Bangers List. What else?
That's what she wrote.
Listen to the playlist on Spotify, on Apple. And we'll talk to you all next week. Thanks, boys.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks, man.
Oh, shit.
How long is that?
Too long.